We're right here before the spring holy days, right here prior to the Passover. And one of the things that certainly comes to mind every year is the fact that a new year, as God counts time, the sacred year begins, a new month, and the festival that is Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread, the beginning of really God's plan played out in terms of the harvest cycles of ancient Palestine, because God is involved in a spiritual harvest, and the spiritual harvest was typified by the physical harvest that took place there in that land. And God instituted a calendar to do that. So I know that there have been various questions that have come up about the calendar, and I would like to. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I'm going to be able to have the final authoritative answer on every possible question that anybody could come up with. But I'm going to try to give you an overview of the sacred calendar and address certainly major topics on it. It can be a very technical subject, and I'm going to try to deal with it in a way to deal with overall things. And I'll be glad to stay around and visit and to maybe address specific things that if someone has specific questions that are not addressed in the Bible study. But I think it is important for us to understand why we do what we do. In Genesis chapter 1, we read that when God here in Genesis chapter 1 verse 14, God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of heaven, in the great expanse of the heavens. Let there be lights there to divide the day from the night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years." Now, we find here a couple of things. God set lights in the firmament. What lights are in the firmament? Well, the sun is in the firmament. That's in the expanse of heaven. You see the sun. You look up, you see the moon, you see the stars. And so God set these there for lights. God designed the whole universe geared around the fact of placing this planet Earth and man upon it, because this is where God is working to create a family. And God established all the various cycles. Now, there are various things that are brought out here. You have, in terms of the sun. Now, there are a couple of things that are involved with the sun. One, of course, that is regulated, and is the day. Now, some have gotten confused about when the day ends, things of that sort. You know, that got to be a controversy some places. Well, the Bible certainly shows that the days begin and end at sunset. The earth rotates on its axis. The earth, of course, is tilted. It's on an axis, about a 23-degree turn. If you can imagine an imaginary line that would run down through from North Pole to South Pole, the Earth is tilted on an axis, and the Earth rotates. It rotates on that axis, and it does so about goes around 24 hours. That's why we have the day. That's where the appearance from standing here on the Earth of the sun rising and the sun setting as the Earth is turning on its axis. The Earth not only turns on its axis, the Earth also revolves around the sun. And it takes about 365 and a quarter days. That's approximate. You could get to the minutes and the seconds, but it's approximately 365 and a quarter days. So 365 days, 6 hours, so many minutes, so many seconds, and so many fractions. And the earth is therefore going around the sun. Now, God established that. He says he set the lights in the heavens, and so God established there the basis of the day, the basis of the year. Now, the month, our word month comes from moon. Because not only do we have the earth going around the sun, in terms of revolving around the sun. But we also have a little satellite out here, the moon, about 240,000 miles away from the Earth. The moon is out here, and it is rotating around the Earth. So here's the Earth, and the moon's rotating around the Earth, and the Earth is rotating around the sun. And God established that, and He designed those in a certain way that because of the moon doesn't give out light on its own. The moon reflects the light of the sun. And so as a result, because of the way the moon rotates around the Earth, as you would observe the moon from standing here on the ground, if you have like a day like today when it's clear and pretty and you can look up, you see that the moon goes through what we call various phases, and they are predictable because it's dependent on where the moon is in terms of its rotation around the Earth. Of course, you have to remember, see, the Earth is turning on its axis all this time. The moon's going around the Earth, and the Earth, with the moon revolving around it, is all moving around the sun. And so depending on the connection there, the way the sun's light reflects off the moon, you see the moon go through various phases. Now, the moon takes about 29 and a half days to rotate around the Earth. Now, if you do a little bit of calculation, with 29 and a half days, you'll find that a lunar year, in other words, the number of times it takes the moon to go around the Earth 12 different times, that gives you 12 moons or 12 months, that comes out to about 354 days. Now, we just mentioned that the Earth goes around the sun, takes it about 365 and a quarter days. Now, that gives you what? That gives you a little over 11 days, 11 and a quarter days difference between the time that it takes the Earth to go around the sun and the time it takes the moon to go around the Earth 12 different times to phase through 12 different months. Now, that, of course, presents a problem because there is something else that is involved in all of this. The Earth's rotating around the sun is not just an academic matter. It is the basis of our seasons. You know, a lot of times people... we'll use this to represent the sun, and this pin is the Earth. This is the axis that goes through the Earth. You have to imagine a ball. Now, what we see is over here, the axis, this would be the North Pole, this would be the South Pole, is tilted toward the sun. So what we call the Northern Hemisphere, the top part of the Earth, is going to receive more light, isn't it? But as you go around, by the time you get over here, you find that this tilt is still there, but now they're getting the same amount of sun. Now as it gets over here, the southern part is getting more sun. That is directed at the sun, so the days are longer down here. And as it gets around here, the tilt doesn't affect that. And so you have, again, the north and the south getting the same amount. And so that's the basis of our seasons. That's why you have long days in the summer. This is Northern Hemisphere, see, where we are. Because you get down to Australia, you get down to South Africa, and their seasons are reversed from ours. Because they're on the southern end of the tilt. We're on the northern end of the tilt. Everything above the equator. So everything above the equator, we get long days in the summer and short days in the winter. And in the fall and in the spring, the days are approximately the same length. Now, regardless of the moons, regardless of anything else, that determines the seasons. The basis of where the Earth is in terms of its revolution around the sun and the tilt of the axis, the length of the days, that determines the seasons. There is an imaginary point that can be mathematically calculated. You take the tilt of the axis and you take the direct line, or what is called the plane of the Earth's rotation, and there's a point where they intersect, and that is the point that's called the autumn equinox and the spring equinox. And the point, that's the way that's derived. Now, there's the Arabs, for instance, they observe a lunar calendar. They observe the moon, and that's the basis of their calendar. That's what they do. Now, they have a problem with that, and that is that their years are all 354 days long. You know what that means? That means that within about 3 years, the equinox has actually moved a month on their calendar. The equivalent of that would be that if you did that within a matter of about 18 or 20 years, the 4th of July would be in the dead of winter, and the 25th of December would be in the dead of summer. If you're moving, if you're getting off between the solar year and the lunar year, about 11 days every year, it's just a matter of time until the dates are totally out of whack with the seasons. Now, that, needless to say, God commands that we observe the various festivals when they were introduced. He commands that we observe them, and He commands that they be observed or proclaimed in their seasons. Now, Leviticus chapter 23 tells us that in verse 1, you know, the Lord spoke to Moses, speaking to the children of Israel, saying to them concerning the feast of the Eternal, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. And then he, first one he addresses is the Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath. And then in verse 4, these are the feasts of the Eternal, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. Now that tells you something. That tells you that even though the moon determines the months, that's where we get our word month, you can't just use a lunar calendar, because if you do, the festivals won't be in their seasons. Now, there was a very direct seasonal connection between the festivals of God. The Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread, we're told, occur in the month Abib, A-B-I-B. Or, as it could be spelled or transliterated from the Hebrew, it could A-V-I-V. In fact, the word Tel Aviv is derived from the same word, means the hill of green ears. That's what the name of the city of Tel Aviv means. Because you see, the word Abib or Aviv means green ears. Now, God tells us in Exodus 23, verse 14, three times you shall keep a feast unto me in the year. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. You're to eat unleavened bread 7 days as I commanded you, in the time appointed of the month Abib, for in it you came out of Egypt. Then, verse 16, the feast of the harvest of firstfruits of your labors, which you've sown in your field, and the feast of ingathering, which is in the end of the year. These are the three times. Now, Exodus 23, there are two or three names that are used for several of the festivals. Exodus 23 emphasizes the harvest connection. The first festival season, the first festival time, the three times in the year, the first one is in the month Abib. And it emphasizes that. It doesn't mention the month for the others, but they had a month. But the name of Abib is significant in a way that the names of the other months aren't particularly significant as far as the meaning of the name of the month with the holy day. But you see, what occurs in the spring? That's the time of fresh growth, isn't it? You know, green ears is not talking about somebody going and painting his ears green. It's talking about when you have planted your field and you look out and the first green growth, the first little, green ears of barley and wheat began to come up from the winter crop that has been planted. We look out in the spring, and you know, what do you see? You see the green leaves beginning to come out. You see the green beginning to come out of the brown lawns. It's the connection, you see, is Abib is the month of beginnings. Agriculturally, it's the month of fresh start, new growth, new beginnings. That's what the spring festivals signify. The Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread represent the beginning of God's plan. It's a time of fresh growth, new starts. You see, when we come before God at the Passover to, in a sense, reaffirm the commitment that we made at baptism, then that's the connection. So we have something that we are to celebrate the festival, the first of the three festivals, that is related to fresh starts, green, new green growth. The second one is the Feast of First Fruits, Feast of the Harvest of First Fruits. Now, that's the day that we most commonly call Pentecost. It occurs 7 weeks after the beginning of the harvest there during the Days of Unleavened Bread. That's when the grain harvest, the early harvest, was carried out in Palestine during that 7 week period. And it culminated with the offerings that were made there on Pentecost. It was the festival of the harvest of first fruits. That pictures what God's doing. See, that's God's plan. He starts in the spring with a new opportunity, fresh growth, a fresh start, a new beginning. Then the next festival season is that celebrates the harvest of the first fruits. And that's, of course, what Pentecost focuses in on. God's only calling a first fruits right now. And he focuses in on that. Then, in the fall festival season, the third season, is called the Feast of Ingathering. The great gathering in. The great harvest. So, when we look at the agricultural year of Palestine, God designed it. God designed it, everything from the tilt of the earth's axis, everything to create a system that would highlight three seasons. You know, you go to other areas of the country and you wouldn't get that same message. Go down to the Rio Grande Valley. You wouldn't figure out that. I mean, you go down there and be harvesting, you know, right during the middle of what everybody else calls winter. They call it winter too, but it's not. You can go to other areas of the world and you wouldn't get the same picture. God designed it right on down to the rotation of the earth, the moon, the sun's tilt, or the earth's tilt on its axis, its revolution around the sun. He designed all of that to highlight three festival periods that represent God's dealing with mankind, because God is in the process of a great spiritual harvest. And that's vital for us to keep in mind. God is in the process of a great spiritual harvest. And all of these things are to direct our attention in these ways. Now, God gave some instructions here. And He made it plain that these are festivals that are to be celebrated in Leviticus 23, and they are to be proclaimed in their seasons. Now, if we were to simply observe the moon and just go, you know, 12 months, within a matter of 2 or 3 years, we would not be observing the festivals in their seasons. The Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread would be coming in the winter. The Feast of Tabernacles would be coming in the summer. And you would eventually, within a matter of a few years, you would tilt it around to where Passover was in the fall and Tabernacles was in the winter, or was in the spring, and it would just sort of rotate. That is a matter that was set up. Now, notice what we're told here in Leviticus chapter 23. Who was the book of Leviticus written for? Well, the book is addressed, just as its name implies, it is for the Levites. For the Levites. And it was instructions. Now, God told Moses to speak to the children of Israel and to instruct them about these festivals that were to be proclaimed or announced. Who was responsible for proclaiming and announcing the festivals? I don't think, just the brief explanation I've given in terms of the calendar, I think would suffice to demonstrate that somebody had to keep up with all this. If every individual was attempting to figure out, you know, how to figure things out in terms of how to, you know, when is the Passover? Just turn you loose, see? There's the sun, there's the moon, just, you know, go to it. I don't think most of us would really want to get in that situation, but I'll guarantee you this, if we all did, we would not all be meeting together on the same day, I'll guarantee you. Because everybody wouldn't see it the same. That's just a matter of course. Now, let's notice here in Numbers chapter 10. The Lord, Numbers 10 verse 1, the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, make you 2 trumpets of silver. Of a whole piece you shall make them. You shall make them for the calling of the assembly and for the journeying of the camp. Now, he comes on down, and he says, verse 8, the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow with the trumpets, and they shall be to you for an ordinance forever throughout your generations. Now, as we come on down, let's notice when they were to, what they were to do. They were to blow the trumpets, and this we find here with the silver trumpets, that in verse 3, or verse 2 says that you were to use them for the calling of assembly, for the journeying of the camp. Verse 3, they shall blow them while all the assembly shall assemble themselves together. And if they blow one trumpet, the princes, verse 4, would assemble. They blow an alarm, and it describes the alarms and the journeys. And they were to do this, verse 9, if you go to war, then they were to use the trumpets. And verse 10, also in the day of your gladness and in your solemn days, in the beginning of your months, you shall blow with the trumpet over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices, that they may be to you for a memorial before the Lord. I am the Eternal, your God. Now, how did the Israelites know? How did they know? Leviticus 23 says these days were to be proclaimed in their seasons, on the occasion of the festivals and in the beginning of the months, or the beginning of the moon. These trumpets were to be blown. So it was the responsibility of the Levitical priesthood to determine the calendar. That was a part of their responsibility. Now, it's not, the issue of the calendar is not a new issue. I'm going to show you a little bit later historically. We can go back hundreds of years, centuries, and we can read of various things. We can go back to the turn of this century in the late 1800s. There was a controversy in the Church of God that ranged from the, let's say, the latter part of the 1800s, certainly from 1870s or 80s on up to about 1930, over the issue of the calendar. And there were about three or four ways that it was approached. There were those who celebrated the Passover on the basis of the Hebrew calendar. The sacred calendar is preserved by the Jews. There were those who calculated it for themselves based on when they thought the new moon was. Now, there was a problem, or when they thought the full moon was, because Passover is normally observed at the time of the full moon. Now, there was a problem that those who did that had, and this varied. That's why there were about four or five different dates that were observed among the churches of God during some of those years, scattered through that period. Because some looked and they said, well, they thought, see, this was their idea, that the full moon closest to the spring equinox, the new moon closest to the equinox, was the day that ought to be considered the Passover. Others thought that it ought to be the full moon close, the first full moon after the equinox. They thought that ought to be the Passover. Now, that's two different ways of doing it. Then, determining the moon. There were, depending on where the various congregations were, there was about a two or three day variation of when one guy thought it was full today and another one argued about it and he thought it was full the next night. Because it didn't, you know, you go out and you look, just watch it, and you'll notice that the changes are very gradual. And remember also that the months are approximately 29 and a half days, which means that it will vary a little bit. The full moon of the 14th can vary a little bit in terms of how it's celebrated. The result was that there was confusion. In about 1930, Mr. Herbert Armstrong wrote an article that was published in the Bible Advocate that basically served to settle the issues, that as a result of his article, virtually all involved were convinced in regards to that, and there was, from the time of 1930 onward, a general unity, not that there weren't maybe occasionally some splinter group, little minor variation, but generally, overall, the overwhelming majority, 99+% of the people of God who celebrated the Passover did so on the same day. And Mr. Armstrong's article was the basis of that. And the basis of his article, part of what his article revolved around, was Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3 verse 1 says, what advantage then has the Jew? What profit is there of circumcision? Much every way, chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of God. Or the words of God. That's what oracle means. Now, what does the oracles of God consist? There are three things that unless the Jews have preserved it and preserved it correctly, there are three things you and I could not know or discern for ourselves. Let's take someone who doesn't, you know, has no background in any of the things we're talking about. Let's stick them by themselves on the proverbial desert island and tell them that there is a God in heaven and that they're to serve Him. And then you stop. What could that person figure out for themselves? If you didn't give them any more than that, they really wouldn't know, would they? How would they know what was pleasing to God and what wasn't? So, the first aspect of the oracles of God that has been preserved, God's revelation, The Jews have preserved the text of the Old Testament. They've preserved the Hebrew text. Now, you could hand this individual a copy of the Scriptures. And at that point, he would have a basis of beginning to look through and to study and to find out what God wanted him to do. He could read the Ten Commandments and find out what was pleasing and displeasing to God, which by himself, without that revelation, he wouldn't know. You can go around the world, look at different cultures. They have different ideas about what's right and wrong. So the Jews have preserved the text of the Old Testament. Without that, there's no way you can serve God. Now, one of the things this person would read is that he is to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. That we're to work 6 days, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord our God. At that point, he would run into a problem. Which day is the seventh day of the week? You can go out and watch sunsets for the rest of your life, and you're not going to be able to discern by looking at the way the sun sets whether it's the first day of the week or the third day of the week or the seventh day of the week, are you? How can you observe the Sabbath? We're told to celebrate it on the seventh day of the week. God sanctified that, made it holy. How do you know when the seventh day of the week is? You know, various people have argued about that. We used to have, Mr. Armstrong wrote a booklet years ago on, how was it titled? Has Time Been Lost? I think that was the title of the booklet. Because people say, well, how do you know that the day we call Saturday is really the seventh day of the week? There's one way, and one way only that we know. The Jews have preserved the oracles of God. And one of those oracles, one of the things God had to tell them, you see, and he established it by the miracle of the manna during 40 years, is the cycle of the week. There were 6 days manna came, and the seventh day it didn't. And you read the account. You know, the first time God said, go out and harvest the manna every day and don't try to keep it till the next day because it'll stink. So sure enough, some of them, you know, they weren't sure it was going to fall tomorrow, so they filled them up a pot, and the next day it was crawling out worms. And, you know, they're always a few hard heads. They can't take anybody's word for it. So they filled up their pot, and here the worms came crawling out. Then God told them, he said, now, Friday, you go out and gather a double portion and keep it the next day because there's nothing going to fall on the Sabbath. And sure enough, you read first thing in the morning, some of them went out looking for it. You know, that's human nature, isn't it? Now, obviously, none of us would have done a thing like that. You know, we're far more spiritual than they were, but anyway. You know, the point is, this happened every week for 40 years. And so, somewhere during the process of this, people sort of figured out which day was the seventh. Well, now I'm being a little bit facetious because God established that. He made it clear. The Jews have preserved the knowledge of the seven-day week. And it has been preserved all the way down because you go back and you find the Egyptians and the Romans and various ones, they didn't observe a seven-day week. They had various ideas of how to divide up time. There is not... The only way you can know, you're out here on the proverbial desert island, you have to have established there is a cycle in progress and somebody has to tell you, all right, this is the third day of the week and when the sun sets, the third day will end and the fourth day will begin. Okay, if you've got that point, once you have a starting point, then you can observe the Sabbath out there on your desert island. Now, the next thing you do, so we've come two things. Jews have preserved the text of the Old Testament. You couldn't know God's will without that. They preserved the knowledge of when is the seventh day of the week. Because you couldn't observe the Sabbath. I couldn't. None of us could if they had not preserved the knowledge. Because you can read in the Bible that you ought to keep the seventh day of the week holy, but you have no way to know when the seventh day of the week is unless somebody has been doing it every week on down through time. Now, the next thing you read in the Scriptures, you read back in Exodus chapter 12. Now, just put yourself on the desert island here. You don't have some great background in history and you haven't read all, you know, the church publications. You've got a Bible. And somebody has told you which day it was. And so now you're reading the Bible and you're keeping the Sabbath. And you come in Exodus 12, verse 1. The Lord spoke unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It'll be the first month of the year to you. Now, you read that and you think, that's great. How do you know when to start? This month. Now, what if you read that in December? Would that mean you started in December? What if you read that verse in July? Would that mean you started in July? Well, it was obviously the month that God spoke to Aaron and Moses. But how do you and I know which month that is? Well, a little later we're told it's the month Abib. That's great. If that was all the knowledge we had, so let's get rid of all the calendars. I want you to observe the 14th day of the month Abib from now on. You want to go try to figure it out. When are you going to start? That's where problems run in. Because you see, if all you had was the Bible and observation, there are questions you would come up with. Now, if you studied it carefully, you would find that the word month and moon are connected. But when we're told to observe the month of green ears, how do you know when that month is? You know, the spring doesn't spring up in terms of, let's say, if you're going to look for green growth, we all know that it doesn't pop up exactly the same day every year, does it? You know, there's variation. Sometimes we have a late cold snap. Sometimes we have an early spring. It varies. We all understand that. So how are you going to know when the month of green ears comes? You're going to look out and notice your grass and say, well, I think it's... Looks like it's beginning to green up. This must be the month of green ears. Now I'll start looking for the moon. You know, the equinox comes at approximately, on the Roman calendar. See, the Roman calendar that we use is not exact, and the equinox can vary a day or so on that in terms of the date. March 21st, 22nd is basically the time in which the equinox normally occurs. What you find is that depending on what conclusion you came to, because there's no specific instruction in the Bible about how to figure the calendar. There is general information. But you could have a variation, depending on how you did it, of the Passover. You can have a variation of from March the 7th to April the 6th. If you're going to say, is the Passover, is it the full moon that's closest to the equinox? Is it the first full moon after the equinox? Or maybe it's not the full moon you look for. Maybe it's the new moon you look for. And is it the new moon closest to the equinox? Or is it the first new moon after the equinox? And then you figure forward, see, to the 14th day. You can't point to me any verse in the Bible that tells you that information. I can show you about three different ways of plausibly figuring it. And if all you had was a Bible, you couldn't prove to me strictly from the Bible any more than you can prove to me strictly from the Bible which day is the seventh day of the week. You can prove that we ought to keep the seventh day of the week. But how do you know when the seventh day of the week comes? The Jews have preserved that knowledge. The same thing with the calendar. You see, the calendar was not something that was entrusted. All the information was not entrusted to everyone. God is not the author of confusion. Israel was a community. They were a community, and there was a priesthood that had a responsibility of proclaiming community occasions in their season. Now, there are various things that you've all heard of the 19-year time cycles. Let's go through and let's look at a couple of things. Let me tell you what that's all about. I mentioned earlier that a lunar year is 354 days. That's the length of time it takes the moon to go around the earth 12 times. A solar year is 365 and a quarter days. That's the length of time it takes the earth to go around the sun, make one full revolution. That's an 11 and a quarter day difference. Now, what that means is that in order to keep the festivals in their seasons, in the sacred calendar, some years have 12 months and other years have 13 months. That's the only way you can keep it straight. Approximately every 3 years, a 13th month gets added in. Find me a place in the Bible that tells you how to do that. Find me a verse, a chapter. But I can tell you this, if you don't do that, you won't be observing the holy days in their seasons. Now, there was a pattern that the Jews had. 19 years is the cycle. If it's properly done, if it's figured, what you find is that everything lines up and comes back into harmony and repeats itself on the basis of a 19-year cycle. There's only a few seconds difference from a 19-year cycle to a 19-year cycle in terms of conjunctions of the sun, moon, and earth. Right now, there are what are called, in a 19-year cycle, there are 12 common years and 13 there are 12 common years and there are 7 what are called intercalary years. An intercalary year is a year where you added in a 13th month. Now, if you want to do a little math, you could go through and figure up the number of days. You could, in terms of how it balances out. But what it amounts to, if you look at this 11 day difference, 11 and a quarter day difference, and you're adding in you see, you're adding in, over a period of 19 years, you're adding in 7 extra months. Now, multiply that out. 7 times 29 and a half. You're looking, and that brings you out. You see, that is the difference. If you want to do a little math, let's take 354 and multiply it by 19. 26. Now take 365 and a quarter. Multiply it times 19. You're going to all right. You will notice that I think, if my math is correct, comes out to 6,839 and three quarters. Which, if you subtract the two, you notice you're looking at 113 days difference. That the 12 lunar months a year are shorter than 12 solar months a year. Now, let's take our other figure. We have our month, and we're adding in an extra month 7 times during these 19 years. And the thing that we wind up coming out with is that when you go in a 19 year period, the lunar months and the solar months that you wind up, you can check it on a calendar, check on a holy day calendar over an extended period of time, you'll find out that there's a correlation approximately every 19 years. You see, right now, in a 19-year cycle, the third year, the third, the sixth, the ninth, the 13th, the 16th, and the 18th, there are extra days. There's an extra month that's added in. Now, the months themselves vary a little bit because we're talking about 29 and a half days for the moons. So months are reckoned as basically either 29 or 30 days. The point that you come down to is that there is a system of keeping the solar year and the lunar year together, to where the celebrations never move out of their season. You're having to make an adjustment every 3 years of approximately 1 month. So that makes for variations, and it makes for a system that there are formulas based on in terms of how to calculate it out, because there is a predictability to the heavenly bodies. Now, I want to read you something. I got this, a little over a year ago. Got it right around the time of the fall festival in earlier in 95. From a fella that I'm sure is very sincere. He is evidently the leader of a group called the Universal Church of God up in Seattle, Washington. And he sent here his 1995 calendar. It says, "Greetings, everyone. Please use the calendar to your left rather than any previous calendar I've sent out. I regret any inconvenience which may have been caused by my previous inaccurate dates for the fall days. I hope this correction arrives in time." Now, mine arrived between trumpets and atonement, so mine didn't arrive quite in time. But he says, "I hope this correction arrives in time and wish everyone a happy festival season. Watch for the new moon crescent about 7:20 p.m. after sunset in the western sky, low to the horizon, on September 26th and 27th. From a high, unobstructed vantage point with binoculars. Please phone me if you happen to see it on the 26th. If I get no phone calls, it'll be a sure thing on the 27th. My phone number is 206-244-2222. Now, can you picture the Church of God, thousands of people around the world, trying to figure the festivals this way? We get ready to book days for the holy days. Which day are you going to book? You know, Mr. Turner could book 2 or 3 days here. He'd get Hall for about 3 different days, you know, because, you know, maybe Arthur looked and he saw the new moon and he said, I saw it last night. And I said, I didn't see it last night. I saw it tomorrow night, you know. And what if it's raining? It does, you know. South Louisiana, it rains a lot. I would hate to be dependent on whether I saw the moon. Now, you know, even he recognizes here that you've got to... you got to know where to look, number one. You need a high, unobstructed vantage point with binoculars. Now, if you're in you live in the middle of Houston, you may have trouble finding a high, unobstructed vantage point where you can see the horizon, because what you may see is a bunch of buildings up there. But if you live, you know, I'm not trying to make fun, because I think the man, I'm sure, is very sincere. I'm trying to point out, this isn't the way. This isn't the way God intended things to work. Now, there are several things. I'll give you a little bit of a history in terms of the calendar. I have a few quotes here from taken from the Talmud, taking from what's called the Code of Maimonides. He was a Jewish rabbi that dealt with various things during the medieval period, put a lot of things down in writing. The Talmud, of course, was put together. It is the debates of the Jewish rabbis. It records history, and it also records a lot of varying viewpoints on a variety of subjects. It records the debates of the Jewish rabbis over a period of centuries. Also, I mentioned the cycle, the 19-year cycle of intercalary years. There was a cycle that was used in the days of Christ, and it is not the cycle that is used today. There was a cycle that was used in the days of Christ based on the second year, the fifth year, the seventh year, the 10th, the 12th, the 15th, 17th. I think that's the run. The one we use is a year later than that. 3rd, 6th, 8th, 11th. Now, why? Well, even the 19-year time cycle over a period of about 2,000, somewhere between 2 and 3,000 years, about 2,000 years, the 19-year time cycles are not perfect to the second. Now, a few seconds doesn't make any time over one lifetime, but over centuries and over a couple of thousand years, you move to the point that the Jews faced a problem during the leadership of a particular rabbi called Simon the Third. He was the patriarch of the Jews, the religious leader presided over what's called the Great Synagogue or the Great Beth Din, which means the Great House of Judgment. You don't read that term in the English translations of the Bible, but when you read about the Sanhedrin in the New Testament, the name by which the Jews term, Sanhedrin is a Greek term. Beth Din means house of judgment in Hebrew. That was a term they used. Simon was the one who presided over that between about 140 and 163 A.D. There was a controversy that came up during that time, and that was the fact that Pentecost, it was moving toward the edge of the seasons. Pentecost was going to be observed. It was going to fall into the summer season rather than the spring season. In other words, it would fall after the summer equinox, or after the summer solstice, and the Great Sanhedrin made a ruling that year, and they changed the order of the intercalary years, and that made things fall. They postponed adding a 13th month in, and they let it come back into harmony, and that is the cycle that we've used since. Somewhere before the dawn of the next millennium, we would be faced with something similar. Christ will be back well before that time. I think we can safely predict that you're not going to have to, by the year 3000. But we would be running into another problem similar to that. See, by about the year 3000 or somewhere after, that once again over a period of a couple of thousand years, that things would have moved to where you would be at the edge of the cycle, and unless the order of intercalary years was changed, you would be edging over. Now, this was done. This created some controversy because there were those who observed the Passover on the basis of 14th day of the first month. Now there was a controversy. This culminated with the Council of Nicaea. There is a difference. If you notice on a calendar, sometime Easter is generally very close, within a few days of Passover. But some years, it is a month different. Now, do you know why? Well, I want to read you a letter from Emperor Constantine. Constantine Augustus to the churches. And having experienced in the flourishing state of public affairs the greatness of the divine goodness, I thought it especially incumbent upon me to endeavor that the happy multitudes of the Catholic Church should preserve one faith harmoniously join in their devotions to Almighty God. When the question arose concerning the most holy day, now the English translation renders it Easter. That's what we call it. But you know, that's not what they called it in Latin, and that's not what they call it today. They call it, they refer to it as the Paschal season, right? Paschalis is the Latin term. In South Louisiana, the French call it Pâques. That means Passover. It's the old Samaritan Babylonian trick of calling the wrong thing, of using the right name for the wrong things, and generating confusion. You see, when they argued over it, and we use the term Easter in English, but when they argued over it, the Council of Nicaea in the Greek language or the Latin language, they weren't using the word Easter, they were using the word Passover. You see, it was changes? What changes? We're just clarifying the day we keep Passover. Does that sound familiar? You ever heard anybody use reasoning like that? Next thing you know, here they are meeting on Sunday morning. Oh no, we just are clarifying the time we keep Passover. See, they still call it that to this day in Latin, Catholic Church. Now, he says, when the question arose concerning the most holy day of Paschalis, of Passover, it was decreed by common consent to be expedient that this festival should be celebrated on the same day by all in every place. Now, you see, he's getting ready to crack down on the ones who are observing it on the 14th day of the first month rather than on Sunday. See, the issue, as they viewed it, was not do you keep Passover or Easter, it was what day on which do you keep Passover. They obscured the issue because really they were introducing the pagan festival of Easter, but they were calling it by the other name. He said, truly, in the first place, it seemed to everyone a most unworthy thing that we should follow the custom of the Jews in the celebration of this most holy solemnity, who polluted wretches have stained their hands with a nefarious crime and are justly blinded in their minds. It is fit, therefore, that rejecting the practice of this people, we should perpetuate to all future ages the celebration of this rite in a more legitimate order. So, let us then have nothing in common with the most hostile rabble of the Jews. In pursuing this course with a unanimous consent, let us withdraw ourselves, my much honored brethren, from that odious fellowship. It is indeed in the highest degree preposterous that they should superciliously vaunt themselves that truly without their instruction we cannot properly observe this rite. You see, the issue was, do you follow what the Jews are doing or not? Well, this had been the determination up until this time. And Constantine says, why, this is ridiculous. They're saying that we can't properly observe this without them. We certainly can. We'll observe it on the full moon after the spring equinox. That's when we'll observe it. He settled that question, and that's the way they do it. The problem with that is sometimes it comes close. Sunday after the full moon, because they do it on a Sunday, not just on the full moon. Some years they are very, very close within a day. Other years they're a month off because they rejected, and they made this an issue of the calendar because of these changes that has taken place. So he goes on to emphasize this, this was his conclusion. Now, how did the Jews go about determining things? Did they? I want to read you. This is taken from a book called The Essential Talmud, and this is a section on the festivals, and it deals with that section in the Talmud. And it says, this comment about how that it was done. It says, testimony, this is talking in ancient times, says the Jewish festivals, and in fact most of the calendar, are based on the lunar calendar. Rosh Chodesh, the first day of the month, was fixed for the day when the new moon appeared. The sages of the Mishnaic period, that's back around the time of Christ, had access to quite accurate information on the length of the average lunar month within 2 seconds of the time now established by astronomers. Now, what we're told is, testimony was taken from 2 independent witnesses who had seen the new moon with their own eyes. The witnesses appeared before the authorized court, and if after thorough investigation their testimony was found to be reliable, Rosh Chodesh was fixed on that day. The sole court authorized to discuss this subject and to determine the beginning of the new month, and hence the dates of the holy days, was the central Beth Din in Jerusalem. Subsequently, it was the great Sanhedrin in its places of exile within Palestine. Now, what it amounted to, when you go through, and I'll read you some more out of the Talmud, they had the calculations. They went through a ceremony of observation, but there were times when they compared the testimony with the calculations, and it had to match. They had the authority to accept or reject the witnesses. You see, it was not a matter of confusion. There was a sole court authorized. And this had been the cases. I'll show you a little later, quote, that this was established, this method was established in the days of Ezra. Now, they took testimony, but they also had their calculations, and their calculations were very accurate. They took the testimony, and then they made a decision. There was one year, when Palestine was devastated by war, and the court was unable to meet. Then it was established entirely by calculation and dispersed out. Now, in order to keep all the Jews together, we find that there was... How do you let the Jews who are scattered know? Well, originally, as long as the diaspora, the major groups of Jews were located in countries close, Egypt and Babylonia, a simple form of signaling was employed. Special beacons were lit on high hilltops in Palestine, and the news was transmitted within several hours to Babylonia. The first obstacle to this system was introduced by the Samaritans. They began to sabotage the signaling system by lighting beacons at other times. This created a problem, so then they sent out messengers. Now, the Romans realized this was the system that went on for a period of several hundred years. The Romans realized that as long as the Jewish communities abroad were dependent upon the Beth Din in Palestine, they would remain subservient to the Palestinian center and dependent upon it. They therefore detained the emissaries, in some cases even imprisoning them. So it was at this point in the 4th century that the patriarch Hillel, in the aftermath of this, the Beth Din, the great Sanhedrin, was abolished by the Romans. And as they were faced with this problem, information that had been privileged, information of the priesthood that had not been put in writing, that was transmitted, was committed to writing. This was in the days of a man by the name of Hillel II in the 4th century. So, at this point, it was impossible to continue in this way, and a session of the Sanhedrin decided to draw up binding regulations to fix the dates of festivals and years. They did it by calculation for years in advance. It was submitted to the great Beth Din and given legal sanction and publicized in the diaspora. So then that established the fact that Jews, wherever they were in a position to know rather than to be dependent upon emissaries. They were in a position to know when the various festivals came. Now, in the... Now here I'm going to read you a little bit from the Talmud itself. The other was sort of a commentary or a summary. But this is quoted here. The sacred calendar is calculated not from the spring but from the fall. That was the what's called the Molad of Tishri, that conjunction, the beginning of the new moon of the seventh month. That's the basis by which all the calendar calculations of the Jews are made. Now, the sixth month of the year is the month Elul. And one of the questions here, the Talmud is sort of recorded as debates, as questions and answers. It says, once the messengers have gone forth to report the new moon of Elul, why should they be required to do so for Tishri? And should you reply that the reason is because Elul has been prolonged, in other words, maybe it's 30 days this year rather than 29, this cannot be, because from the days of Ezra onward, we found no instance of Elul being prolonged. Elul always was 29 months, or 29 days. That was something that went back to the days of Ezra. Otherwise, there was no way to know when the first day of the seventh month, when the Feast of Trumpets came. If you're going to wait until you see it, You know, it appears at some point during the day. If you're going to wait until you see it, you're already having... You're right down to the wire, see, and it can vary, and you can... what if it appears, you know, a little while after sunset or in the early morning? Which day is it? Well, there had to be a way of reckoning. Ezra, who was responsible for establishing the great synagogue or the great Beth Din, the great house of judgment, he was responsible for setting the calendar, and he did several things. For one thing, the text of the whole Old Testament was recopied in a different script. If you ever look at maybe an archaeology magazine, the Hebrew script we're familiar with today is not the Hebrew script that Moses used or that was used prior to the days of Ezra. It was a different script. It was a rounded script. Ezra was responsible for introducing a new script. Now, why was that? Well, the Samaritans, who were Babylonians that sort of had a hodgepodge religion that used the name of Yahweh, they on the one hand professed allegiance to the Old Testament scriptures, but really they followed a lot of Babylonian paganism. They had their own copy, and the problem was, how do you establish what is the authorized copy of the Old Testament? So you have different ones around. A lot of the modern translators, well, they want to use this or they want to use that. The authoritative text of the Old Testament is the one the Jews preserved, what's called the Masoretic text. How did you keep people from getting confused of what was what? Ezra introduced a different script. It was a squared script. It was what the Jews had used in Babylon. And it was a different, same letters, was a different way of making the letter. It was a squared off script. Knowing the Samaritans would not want to be copying the Jews, it made a very clear distinction between what was a Samaritan copy of the Bible and what was a Jewish copy of the Bible. Now, Christ made it plain to the woman at the well in Samaria that the Samaritans didn't know what they worshipped, that salvation is of the Jew. That's what he told her. You know not what you worship. We know whereof we speak. See, God preserved it there. Now, here, reading also from the Talmud, talks about that the Mishnah refers, this is a section of the Talmud, one of the earlier sections, refers to the calculation. And as for the intercalation, this adding in of the 13th month, it means the calculation relating to this. See, how do you figure it? The Mishnah thus holds that only calculation is required in fixing the length of the month. Now, that was, read you a little bit further from Maimonides, who was a Jewish rabbi. He goes through and he describes how it was done. And he says, "For Moses and Aaron were thus ordered, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months," Exodus 12:2. "The sages have learned from an oral tradition going back to our teacher Moses." See, they have learned this, what the meaning is. Now, the authority over this evidence is vested in you and in your duly qualified successors. In times when no Sanhedrin exists in Palestine, fixation of new moon days and intercalation of years was effected only by methods of calculation as we are using today. That had been historically done. Even in the time when observation was the basis for determining the recurrence of the new moon day, the court used to ascertain by calculation and with great precision, according to the methods of the astronomers, the exact time of the true conjunction of the moon with the sun in order to find out whether the moon would be visible on the night of the 30th or not. You see, it was never just a matter of people going out and observing. There was a ceremony that was carried out, but it was regulated by calculation to begin with. Now, some of you have heard about what are called postponements. That means that the exact moment of the conjunction, the beginning of the new moon, and the day that is celebrated by as the first day of the month, let's say particularly this would, you would note it with the Feast of Trumpets, but it could vary with any month, that sometimes there is a variation of one or two days. Now, there are four rules, there are four reasons why there's what is called a postponement. The first and the most common is an astronomical reason. Number one, the new moon occurs. The new moon can be observed. We live on a round earth. We're scattered all over. Everybody is not going to see it at the exact same time. Can't, because it You know, it varies. Moon, you can't see. You know, when we can see the moon, people on the other side of the earth can't. And depending on where you are on this round earth, as to exactly what you see. So it's based on the way it would be observed from Jerusalem. Now, this, I'm going to read you going through a little bit on the postponements. I mentioned earlier about the earth's equinox. Technically, there is an exact moment when this, what is called the Molad of Tishri, that is this moment of the new moon, first a crescent would appear, be visible from Jerusalem at the beginning of the seventh month. Now, this can occur anywhere during a 24-hour period. When this occurs at noon or after, the first of Tishri is postponed to the next day. Now, why is that? Well, basically the reason is the fact that the earth is tilted at this angle, 23.5 degrees, the axis. The moment of the conjunction, as you would look at it from the sun, if you know, it appears that the sun is moving. We know in reality that the earth is moving, but we'll talk about it from the sun. The sun is here, and as we observe it from the earth, there's this point on the equator that it crosses. It takes a period of time. The sun, because of its size and because of its crossing over. You notice, we've all seen eclipses. You notice how the sun passes over, the shadow passes over the moon, and it takes a period of time? You can figure it out. I've got a little diagram up here that you can look at. But basically, it takes a six-hour period to pass from the center of the sun to the edge of the sun in terms of passing over this point. What it means is that even though the center of the sun would be the beginning of the equinox, that really it's not completed until there's at least a six-hour period during which the trail of the sun passes across this point. So it's not really fully begun. That's the main postponement that exists anytime the Molad of Tishri occurs after 12 noon from Jerusalem. It's postponed for a day. That's for an astronomical reason. There are three other reasons as to why it will sometimes be postponed. The first reason has to do with the way the holy days fall. Basically, the rule is that the Day of Atonement can never fall on a Friday or a Sunday, and that none of the fall holy days occur on a Sunday. Now, there's a very practical reason for that. When you go back to the book of Exodus, you find when God, let's notice some instructions here. In Exodus chapter, we'll pick it up in Exodus chapter 16. Exodus chapter 16, verse 22. Came to pass on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers. And verse 23, he said unto them, this is what that which the Lord has said, tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which you will bake today. See that which you will see. That which remains over, lay up for you to be kept until tomorrow. And so they did this. Now, they were told that the day before the Sabbath was the preparation day. Understand, of course, they didn't have refrigerators, they didn't have microwaves, they didn't have all kinds of things that we take for granted in our society. Friday as a preparation day was very meaningful. They wanted soup. They didn't go open a bowl, open a can and pour it into the thing. I mean, first you kill, the recipe started, first you catch the chicken. That's the recipe for chicken soup. First you catch the chicken. And now, if you're talking about opening up a can and putting it in a bowl, there's not a whole lot involved in that. If you're talking about starting with catching the chicken, you've got a little work ahead for you. Friday was the preparation day. Now, the rule was, or the basis of the postponement was, that if the Sabbath, if atonement comes on a Friday, when do you prepare for the weekly Sabbath? You've got the Day of Atonement being the preparation day. You're forbidden to do any kind of work on atonement. And you can't eat all day long. And now, how are you going to break your fast? Where are you going to go to now the Sabbath started? You going to go out and start catching your chicken to make your chicken soup? There was a problem. They remember now, none of these rules about how to calculate the calendar are found in the Bible. You can't even begin to get started on the calculation of the months and on that, except, you know, in a very vague sense. But there are several questions that you can't answer if only you had the Bible. There has to have been information preserved apart from what we read in the text of Scripture, just as there had to have been information preserved about which day is the seventh day of the week apart from the text of Scripture. You have to be able to have some information about some of this. I've given you, sort of a little bit of a summary. But so that's the postponement, that atonement doesn't come on a Friday or a Sunday, because that way there is a preparation day that you have for atonement. Nor do any of the fall festivals come on a Sunday, because then the Sabbath would have been the preparation day for them. And they were celebrations, and they were big festive occasions, and there was cooking, and there were various things. And where are you going to, how are you going to do all that? It's not you're not going to have it in your refrigerator. You're not going to pull it out of your freezer and pop it in a microwave. Now, the point is that there was a logical reason. The other two reasons had to do with the length of the year. A year could be too short or too long. This is a common year. This had to do with making the 19-year cycle work out. A common year could not be longer than 355 days, and an intercalary year could not be longer than
The maximum
a common year can have is 355 days. The minimum length of an intercalary year, a year with 13 months, is 383 days. Now, there are reasons for that mathematically why, if that's not the case, the 19-year cycles won't work out. Those were the other two reasons that there could be a one-day variation. You have to realize that the new moon can occur throughout this 24-hour period of time. The Levites, the priesthood, was told to proclaim it, to announce it. They sounded the trumpet. They were responsible for determining those times. Now, it's interesting because when you read, you find out that there were some controversies and that the Sanhedrin of the time of Christ was divided between Sadducees and Pharisees. The Pharisees, one of the interesting things we find is that the Pharisees, as you read the Talmud, they had some of their own ideas, and they, on several occasions, were instrumental in not allowing the postponement where on that basis then atonement would come on a Friday or a Sunday. Now, Christ actually addressed that subject in Matthew 23. Then, verse 1, "Then spoke Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat." That's not talking about just anything scribes and Pharisees did. The only time the scribes and Pharisees sat in Moses' seat is when they sat in the seat of judgment, when they participated in the proceedings of the Sanhedrin, the great Beth Din. He says, "All therefore, they whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do, but don't do after their works, they say and do not. They bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne and lay them on men's shoulders. They themselves will not move them with one of their fingers." The burden, when you read the story of that period of time, the burden that they lay on the people was the frequency with which, during that period of time, they used their authority and their numbers in the Sanhedrin to insist on that the day be proclaimed and the postponement not be utilized. And the result was that it bound heavy burdens on people. It worked a real hardship. People wound up, if atonement was celebrated in the community, in the temple, it was proclaimed for a Friday, they were really in a bad way with as the Sabbath came on, in terms of having been able to have, they could not prepare food on the Day of Atonement, and then here they were on the Sabbath, and it was heavy burdens, grievous to be borne. The point is that Christ made, he did not tell the people, everybody go and just do it your own way, even when they were doing it in a way that was not the best. He said, they sit in Moses' seat. They're sitting in the seat of judgment. The proclamation of these things is something that is to be made from a central authority, and you recognized this. There were those, there were sectarian communities, the Essenes, who are known as the community that produced the Dead Sea Scrolls. They had separated, and they were off down here, and they had sort of their own ideas. But when you go through the book of Acts, it's apparent that the New Testament church was in harmony with the calendar that was proclaimed from the temple and that was observed by the Jewish community. We could go through various things in addition, but I want to summarize. We see this. We also see that here was, when we look at the sacred calendar, you're looking at something that requires more than just looking out the window. That there is a whole system, there's a whole cycle. All of the holy days have to be determined, and they have to be determined in a way that they will perpetually fall in their seasons. That's not something that I think any of us, including myself, are qualified to do on our own. And there is a system that certainly goes back, the basis of it goes back to what was revealed to Moses. The rules that the Jews used on down were established there by Ezra. There have been certain refinements in some of these areas, but what we find is that it was something that was determined, that was utilized by, that was proclaimed by the constituted authority. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 33, we're told God is not the author of confusion. God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. God did not introduce a system that would produce confusion among his people, and when it comes to the proclamation of the holy days, unless it is done by a central authority, then there is going to be confusion. There just is. Everybody is not going to see it at the same time. Some aren't going to see it at all. You know, Christ made the point to the New Testament church, to the apostles, when he instructed the disciples in Matthew chapter 16, it's recorded, when he told them in verse 18, Matthew 16, 18, that he would build his church. And he says to the apostles in verse 19, I give unto you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, the things that unlock access. Whatsoever you shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatsoever you shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Binding and loosing was a technical legal term among the Jews. That was what the Beth Din, great Beth Din, did. Christ gave them authority to make binding and loosing judgments. Now, a judgment is the application of the principles of Scripture to specific circumstances. That doesn't mean you can change the Sabbath to Sunday, because we're told when the seventh day of the week is and we know when it occurs. But there are matters when it comes down to determining the way and the proclamation of the holy days. We have only general information in the Scriptures, and there is not enough evidence. I defy anybody with the Bible in hand only to be able to come up with an accurate view. Just you go and look and try to figure it out over a period of time. There may be times that you come very close. There may be times you hit it on the button, and there are going to be times that you're going to be off. And you're going to run into problems over a period of time, because you're going to run into the fact that the lunar year and the solar year are of different lengths. And when do you add in a 13th month? When do you figure a year with 13 months and one with 12 months? There's no way, there's no instruction in the Scripture to do it, but you can't keep the solar and lunar calendar together without it. There has to be a central authority that does that. Now, God says in Romans chapter 3, we've read before, what advantage has the Jew? Chiefly this, that unto them are committed the oracles of God. Romans 3:3. What if some did not believe? What if some of them really didn't believe? Shall their unbelief make the faithfulness, that's the best rendering, the faithfulness of God without effect? God forbid. Yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. Is it possible the text of the Old Testament has been corrupted? No. You know, the fact that some of the copiers didn't believe it is irrelevant. Their unbelief is not going to make the faithfulness of God without effect. Otherwise, you and I wouldn't have a Bible we could rely on.